anyway, so yeah, I do a lot of jazz, and it does creep in. The cool thing about being a composer right now in 2004 is that we are the product of all of our influences. I can't even speak at this point. And we get to write in any style we feel like at any moment.
All those lockstep schools are out there.
That's right.
They
really are. I mean, you know, I mean, the education is incredibly important, and knowing all those locksteps is a very cool thing to know. But ultimately, what matters is writing from the heart and from the spirit and the soul, and use whatever language comes to you. And I think this piece is actually an interesting example of a little bit of schizophrenia, and I threw the jazz thing. And there's another piece that I'll play, I think, after this that also has in the middle what I think of as almost kind of a jazz ballad kind of thing happening.
Well, speaking of that difference in speaking from the soul and your website and all those things, what the heck is this dial-a-mood?
Dial-a-mood. A little tongue-in-cheek joke there, because it's my railing against the oh-so-serious way of cataloging pieces just by instrumentation, when in fact we're human beings. We listen to emotion. That's what music's about, man. It's like, it's passion, it's communication, it's expression, it's emotion, it's how are you feeling right now. And so I figured with that, wouldn't it be fun? It's kind of the way film music demos are put together, by mood, right? Because you're looking at, the director is looking for a certain mood for the score or a certain mood for the scene. So you put your demos together that way in the film business. So why shouldn't we do that in the concert world? Because I think my music is very emotional.
Yeah. Yes, Alex, your music is very emotional, and what impresses me hearing you speak and then knowing of your repertoire and your background is that here we have a conservatory-trained composer who knows all of her classical rules and counterpoint and technique, and we also have a composer who has been out there in the film music world, who's written...
Jingles.
Jingles, who clearly knows her jazz. And knows a very wide variety of techniques and styles. And you went out into the world, into the professional music world very early on. Mm. And I'm curious what you think about how people are trained these days, and what is it that you think the average music student is missing out on if they are not out there in the world, and what is it that, you know, you feel you want to talk about with them?
Well, that's an interesting question. I think ultimately, especially now, things are very different than when I was in school 20-some-odd years ago, and emphasis on the some-odd. And when I left conservatory in 1983, and so what are we, 21 years now? Back then, self-publishing and websites and ways of reaching your own audiences were not available to us. The technology hadn't caught up to us yet, right? Now, 20 years later, wow, it's such a change. And we have a power and a control over our careers that we simply have not had before. More to the point, the gatekeepers are gone, the publishers, the record companies. We don't need them. I don't want to say we don't need them at all. I'm just saying that the need for them is framed very differently, because we are capable of distributing and putting out our own material. It's a very democratic thing that has happened thanks to technology. As a result, what students need to know is how to use these tools to their advantage. And I don't think that still there are enough classes available to them in most conservatories that teach them about the business of what their music is worth, that their music is actually worth something, that they are worthwhile, that they deserve to be paid for what they do. What a concept. And that art and money are not mutually exclusive at all, and that there are ways you have to know about performing rights organizations like ASCAP and BMI and CSAC. You have to know about copyright. You have to know about intellectual property rights. You have to know about a lot of things, about publishing and how to make your scores readable. A lot of things that we didn't pay as much attention to 20 years ago. I think kids need to know how to make a living, that you can make a living out there as a concert composer. You just have to have a little bit of patience and smarts of how to do it. Licensing is another thing. How to use your music in a lot of different ways. Send your tunes out there like little slave labor children. You know, get them working for you.
Do you worry about the commodification of art that way?
I wish it would be commodified in that. Wouldn't it be nice if all the four of us had tunes that were selling the way a Britney Spears tune would sell? I mean, more power to Britney, right? And all the pop artists out there. We deserve to be commodified. Our stuff is great, right? People need to discover it.
Just a side note. I'm dealing with grant writing, because I'm putting on a concert in October, and the music is written. I don't have to worry about that anymore, but I have to somehow pay for it. And I just talked to one of the companies that I'm applying to applying for a grant, and she said, because I have to go through a 501c3 organization, this particular organization she's already given money to, so she doesn't think that she can do it anymore. It doesn't matter about the product anymore. It's
right.
just and I never studied grant writing, and I guess I'm missing something because
I should have studied marketing.
That's right. All right. Well, you know what, kids? It's 4 o'clock.
We have business to do.
We have some business to do. My name is Alex Shapiro, the music commodifier, and you're listening to Calvos and Damien's new music, Bizarre. No, it's actually Bazaar. Thus, Bazaar. Sell. Stuff to sell. See? It's a bazaar. It's all for sale. Buy their CDs.
Well, we're for sale.
That's right. Easily and cheap, too. Let me tell you. You're one stop for non-pop. You're Red Alert for new music on the Non-Pop International Network.
Here on WGDR Plainfield. Wow. Best ID so far. We'll just have to, you know, put some music to it and commodify it some more.
Jingles.
Rounders!
Rounders! Let's hear something else before
okay.
the next question.
Let's moving right along. Let me play for you a wonderful... I feel like the greatest thing about playing pieces for everybody is to showcase these fabulous musicians. This is a bassoon sonata. It's a little bit older. I wrote this in 1999, and it's a one-movement piece. Thank you, Igor. Go back to your grave. Carolyn Beck is another fabulous Los Angeles player. She is on bassoon. She commissioned the work as well. This will be on her next album called Beck and Call. And Dolores Stevens, track one. Dolores Stevens is playing piano on Of Breath and Touch. And in the middle section, you'll hear a somewhat jazz-inspired portion.
Our guest is Alex Shapiro, our co-host Laura Koplowitz. Here it is. Breath and Touch, music by Alex Shapiro, our guest today on Calvos and Damien. She's here with us. Laura Koplowitz is here with us. We should get the whole sort of microphone thing turned around so you can be our guest one of these days, Laura.
I agree. Laura's music is beautiful.
This is a wonderful show, and I'd be delighted, and I'm delighted to be here today with Alex Shapiro.
I pay her well. What can I say?
And you're taking our place here, so you have another question on the agenda.
Well, Alex, there are many, many thoughts that are running through my mind about composing and your work as a composer. Certainly listening to this piece and realizing that you have had, you know, quite a number of commissions and that this is necessary in today's world and also, of course, desirable for the composer to interact with ensembles, create new works. I'm curious, how do people find you? And how do you find ensembles?
Oh, great question. Well, the easiest way to find me, this in the land and day of Google, is, of course, through the website, alexshapiro.org, and email alex@alexshapiro.org. It's just that easy. And the way I find ensembles, if I feel that they don't know, you know, things in my catalog or haven't had a chance to hear stuff of mine, I love to do a little homework on the internet and read their website, see what they program, look and see if first of all, if their ensemble fits instrumentation of my pieces, and then see if their style of music matches up with mine. And if so, I drop them a little friendly email, very short, professional, and I include a link to the place on my website where they can immediately click and hear the piece of music that I think they might like. And I have to tell you, and for any composer listening, this is a wonderful tool we have. It's very, I get a very high rate of success with this, and I'm very blessed with a lot of performances all over the place, and I think this is one thing that composers can do to help introduce themselves to a much larger audience. And again, it's a tool that we didn't have even 10 years ago. It's the power of the internet for us to have a voice is remarkable, and I try to make full use of it. And it's just a matter of there are not enough hours in the week for the writing that we have to do, the administrating of all of the things in our business, and the contacting and getting, you know, new blood. It's very time consuming, but it's really, really rewarding.
One of our former guests and a Vermont composer, Gwyneth Walker, has said that over and over and over, and she's said she's had to budget her day, where she allots so many hours to the composition process, so many hours to the preparation process, and the rest of it is
absolutely
marketing.
Absolutely. By the way, I want to mention that sitting with me here, we have not one, not two, but three winners of the Vermont Symphony Orchestra Commission sitting with me here. So this is a distinguished group. I'm just very proud.
You're the only loser among us.
I'm the only loser.
My gosh.
I don't live in Vermont. But I'm warmer than you 6 months out of the year.
We'll have to do the group trip to California.
That's right.
The tour.
The beach awaits. I do want to tell the listeners that if you haven't been to the www.calvos.org website, it is so worth a visit. It's so worth a visit. It's my Valley Girl speak from 10 years in Van Nuys. So it's just great. They are responsible for archiving so many living composers and their work. It is a massive site. It is just chock full of great, great stuff, and we all owe them a debt of gratitude. And if you'd like to pay that debt in any form or manner, you can visit their website and find out how to do so. And I'm not allowed to say anything else than that, but I do want to encourage supporting these guys. They're just fabulous.
We have many pals who pay to support them.
It's a friendly group.
So friendly.
But anyway, I thank you so much for having me on the show. This is a lot of fun.
Wait, we're not done.
We're not done yet. Hey, we're not done. Ask me another question.
We have one more thing. We only have a few minutes to ask you about this. It's actually Laura's question, the left brain, right brain question.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We were talking about this in the car.
We were talking about how composers compose. And even to composers, yes, this is a great mystery. And we do enjoy thinking about ourselves once in a while, thinking about our minds and brains. And the question does get posed at times, how do you do this work? How do you create it? And at the level of the creative process, there seems to be a really interesting mix of letting the images, emotions, moods flow in order to come up with the sensibilities, the feeling tone, the melodic materials, and then actually putting it on paper seems to be yet another process, perhaps more akin to architectural drafting, to thinking through scientific formulas. And so this is leading us to the question about the relationship between what in these days is called left brain, right brain, in the composing process. So I'm curious, Alex, what do you think about that?
I think the biggest problem is there is no relationship half the time. I mean, it's so daunting because, you get that first gesture of the musical idea in your head, and there it is, sitting in your right brain, and out it comes in your imagination, and it's wonderful. You think at least it's wonderful. Maybe others will disagree. And then there's the right part of your brain that is suddenly, the left part of your brain rather, that is suddenly responsible for having to get that brilliant gesture down on paper as quickly as possible. And that means suddenly becoming a mathematician and figuring out the rhythms and the note stems and the this and the that. And no matter how facile you are writing music, no matter how eloquent you are, no matter how quick and well-versed you are, it is never quick enough. And I'll tell you, it is a constant battle. And I got to tell you, Dennis is shaking his head here, up, down, not side to side. And I think we all agree this is one of our big battles as composers, is trying to make that seamless, intuitive translation between those two hemispheres of the brain.
There's another teeny hemisphere of the brain that's thinking about peanut butter.
The pituitary?
Peanut butter, cat food.
Showers.
Paying bills.
Neglected husbands,
neglected spouses and partners and what have you. And then the two parts of the brain that seem to be saying, do the music,
that's
do the
right.
music,
that's
get
right.
the music done.
Often the music wins out.
And we have to win out with the music. We have one more piece coming up. Before we announce that, let you know that next week, Sulian Tan will be here. She has a live performance here on Calvis and Damien. This will be a spectacular show because we have Chris Molina and also Evan Bennett. So the three of them will be here live in Studio Z. They will be premiering several pieces, including one of Sulian Tan's, one of Darren Hoggins, and one of mine. So we're looking forward to that next week. August 14th, Erling Wold with a recording we made in San Francisco. His music is some of the most eloquent and beautiful vocal music I have ever heard in contemporary music. He was recorded in San Francisco at the studio of Jerry Gerber. August 21st, Sean Hickey will be here live in the studio, microtonalist and very funny person. We absolutely look forward to that. And the 28th of August, Brian Reinbolt, also recorded in San Francisco. So next 4 weeks are going to be a wild month of August. We're going to absolutely love that. Don't forget the Blue Moon tonight. And now tell us about Slip.
Slip is a funny little piece for harpsichord and violin, commissioned by violinist Robin Lawrence, another dear friend of mine who is the violinist with the renowned California Ear Unit, which I think they've been together about 25 years, and her friend and colleague Kathleen McIntosh on harpsichord. And Kathleen is currently in Santa Fe, beautiful Santa Fe, New Mexico. And they, again, another great example of a composer-musician relationship that just exploded into laughter. And I handed them this piece, and it's gone well, shall we say. This will also be on the new album. We're about to remix it, so forgive any imbalances you might hear, but I thought you guys might enjoy hearing the music.
We love unmixed music. Alex Shapiro, thanks so much for joining us, and Calvis and Damien. Laura Koplowitz, thanks so much for co-hosting.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
See you next week with Sulian Tan.
Nothing.